its current state on 90.5 WKAR. We all know Michiganians we feel are extraordinary for their memorable life experiences or their sacrifices, maybe for their success or their service, and for the insights that result from those experiences. Getting better acquainted with extraordinary people is the focus of Current State's ongoing series, Voices of Experience. Few people are as indelibly linked to East Lansing as George Perlis, the head coach of Michigan State University football between 1983 and 1994. The burly, no-nonsense Detroiter spent much of his adult life here at MSU as a player, assistant coach, head coach, and athletic director. And as if all that weren't enough, there's also Super Bowl rings, the United States Football League, his launch of the Motor City Bowl game, now the Little Caesars Pizza Bowl, along with his long-established golf outing to benefit Special Olympics. At age 79, Perlis still resides in East Lansing with wife Sally, and for 5 years he's served as a member of the University Board of Trustees. I began by asking George Perlis about the Detroit of his boyhood and what it was like growing up as an only child.
We had an apartment in 7728 Pitt Street. It was a one-bedroom apartment. I slept in a Murphy bed. It was in a closet. They rolled out every night. Pushed the furniture, and I slept in the Murphy bed until I was 17 years old. I remember my dad sending me over to pay the rent for the month. It was $50.50 for a month's rent at Pitt Apartments. There were a lot of kids in my neighborhood. A lot of them that I remained friends for till this day for years. In fact, one Jimmy Teets and I started kindergarten together. I was always around a big group of guys.
But was it tough being an only child?
No, that wasn't tough. I was out all the time doing one thing or another. I was a paper boy and playing football and different sports. It didn't bother me being the only child.
Were you ever doted on because you were the only child?
Oh, you mean spoil me? I'm sure that they did at times, but they were strict. You'd come home if... You were supposed to be home a certain time. You better be home. My mother had what they call a cat and nine tails, which was my dad's belt, and she would cut in strips. That's how she got your attention.
Doesn't sound like doting to me.
No, she wasn't. She wasn't easy, but she was a tough lady, and so was my dad. And they did everything to bring me up the right way.
What's your earliest football memory?
Football memory would be playing tackle football in our schoolyard. It was basically cinders. It didn't bother us. And I guess the other thing, the biggest thrill, was having an opportunity to come to Michigan State and play for Michigan State. That was the epitome of my goal in my life.
How old were you when you were playing on that cinder field?
Oh, I was. We were. That was right across the street from my house. We would be over there at 6, 7 years old, 8 years old, playing baseball. A lot of baseball in our area. Of course, we were close to Tiger Stadium. And we could go to Tiger Stadium, take a lunch, and they would let us in and would sign us certain sections to dust seats. We'd bring a rag and our lunch, and we'd go in, and we really didn't care about making any money dusting the seats, which we didn't make. But we saw the games, got to see the Tigers play all the time.
What do you remember of your years in the Army?
Well, we had that buddy system, so our first few months in the Army, we were in Camp Chaffee, Arkansas, where we had basic training. I think what I remember the most about my Army experience is getting off the boat. We took a boat from Oakland, California, supposedly to Korea, and that we got to Hawaii, and the boat... came into Hawaii for a day. They had me get off, and the rest of the boat went on. They got me off because I had a record of playing football, and the U.S. Army in Hawaii had a football team, and they were looking for players, and they saw on my resume that I was an ex-football player. I was an all-state football player in high school, my junior and senior year, so they took me off the boat so I could stay there and play football. And Duffy kept recruiting me, and when I got out, I had an offer of a scholarship to Michigan State, which was a big deal because had not I, there's no way I was ever going to college. No one in our area went to college.
Your MSU playing career was cut short due to a knee injury. How big a blow was that?
That hurt. Especially when they said you can't play any longer. They said if it, they fixed the knee, but if it ever got hit again and that ligament got hurt, they'd have to fuse the bones and you'd have a stiff leg the rest of your life. So the Dr. Furyk wouldn't allow me to play. And so then the best thing was to get into coaching, and I coached those first 2 years at Michigan State, one as a senior assistant, the next one as a graduate assistant.
What stands out most in your memory from your years as an assistant at Michigan State?
Well, the loyalty that Duffy had to all of his assistants. Duffy treated us all very good. He liked his poor kids. He was a poor kid from Barnesboro, Pennsylvania, and he was a real human being. He was someone special that had a big heart and wanted to see us all get a degree. He was an excellent father for all the players.
Former MSU head football coach and athletic director George Perlis is our guest today on Current State's Voices of Experience. In 72, it was off to the NFL, to the Pittsburgh Steelers under head coach Chuck Knoll. How hard a decision was it to leave East Lansing?
I wanted to go as far as I could in the coaching profession, and this is an opportunity. Pittsburgh wasn't really that successful very much at that particular time. But in 69, they hired Chuck Knoll. His first year, he won one game. His second year, I don't think he won three or four. But when I came in 72, he had all the groundwork done, and we had the first championship in the history of the Steelers in 72, first division championship. And then we went on and had, we were there 10 years, and we had four Super Bowls. But Chuck Knoll was a great coach, a great one. And
what made him great?
Well, he was intelligent, very intelligent. He was straight arrow, clean cut, and he was a hard worker. And he demanded, you know, he would, I remember a player coming late for a meeting. He said, I'm not going to fine you right now. One more time, you'll be in your life's work. There was no monkeying around. And don't forget, we had some great stars that maybe would take advantage of some coaches, like, because they couldn't handle them. People like Joe Green and Jack Hamm and Jack Lambert and Franco Harris and Terry Bradshaw and Rocky Blyer. 13 of them were Hall of Famers, Mel Blunt, L.C. Greenwood. But they never, at one time did I ever see anybody talk back to Chuck Knoll. Probably his best friend in coaching was Shula. He'd worked for Shula for a couple of years, and he had a lot in common. But Chuck Knoll is... they're writing a book on him now, as a matter of fact. But Chuck Knoll was something very, very, very special. He played 8 years with Chicago. He was with 4 as a linebacker and 4 years as a messenger guard.
Then after a year working to get the Philadelphia Stars of the USFL off the ground, it was back to East Lansing as a head coach. Were you not confident about the future of the USFL?
Oh, I wasn't concerned about that. I just wanted to come back to Michigan State so bad I could taste it.
Why?
Because I loved it here. I had a great experience. I met my wife here, and everything was Michigan State. I had this opportunity to come to Michigan State, and I told the owner of the Philadelphia Stars, Miles Tannenbaum, I said, Miles, I'm going back if I have to walk. I'm going back to Michigan State. And I came back here, and I was trying to cover the 10 years since Duffy retired. And then we came in with some pretty good assistant coaches who did some pretty good recruiting, and it took us 5 years to get it going, but we got the Rose Bowl in the fifth year.
12 seasons as head coach at Michigan State, 7 bowl appearances, including 88's memorable Rose Bowl victory. Collectively, what has stayed with you the most from all those years?
Well, winning the Rose Bowl. Playing Southern Cal, the opening game, night game, first night game we had, beating them. Then going out to the Rose Bowl and beating them. And then playing them 2 years later in the El Paso Bowl. We beat them again, so we beat them the last three times, and that stands out when you have all the respect you have for Southern Cal. And we beat them three times in a row, and that was quite a thrill. And the Rose Bowl, all the bowls were. We went to 7. We probably could have gone to 10 if the rules were different in those days. Right now you can go to a bowl game with 6 wins. In those days you couldn't. We had a couple of seasons we had 6 wins and didn't go to a bowl game. So having a chance to go to 7 bowl games was fun also.
Our special guest on Current State's Voices of Experience today is George Perlis. You were known as a really tough coach. Did you lighten up at all over the years as a coach?
No, I was pretty consistent in demanding loyalty, giving it and asking for it. Punctuality was a big thing. If the player was late for a meeting, the door was locked. And then you have to go sit in my office and wait till the meeting's over, then listen to my noise. I used to teach him things like a scenario where 4 guys are going out. You're 21 years old, you're going out and having a beer. Come back to the dorm, 3 guys get out. Go in the dorm, the driver goes to jail. So who drives? The dummy drives. If you see any of my players this day, if you ask them who drives, they'll say the dummy drives. Teach them things that weren't exactly football, but they were things that would carry over. Like I used to say, anybody can be on time. You know, you can be tall, short, fat, skinny. Anybody can be on time. There's no excuse for not being on time.
Tough love, is that how you'd describe your approach?
Right, I would say that's truth. I had great compassion for those kids, and I probably could have done a better job with the media. Media would ask me questions that pertain to punishment of the players. I wouldn't tell them. And I used to explain to them, if you have a son and he did something, you don't go around telling the whole world, do you? So I would keep some things away from the media, and they didn't appreciate it. But I felt that I was their father, and I was going to protect them.
Your tenure as MSU head coach was extremely turbulent at the end. President Peter McPherson fired you in the aftermath of a grade tampering investigation. The program had to forfeit all of its victories in 94, had to give up some scholarships. How do you look back on that period?
Well, that's too bad that ever happened. As it turned out, there was nothing wrong. There was no wrongdoings, and McPherson was way out of line. He just came in, and I was looking for a reason not to pay me, I think.
Well, the program was found to have a lack of institutional oversight.
And I don't know what that means. Institutional oversight. They're not talking about football players. They're talking about administration.
Has your view of that period changed over the years? Or did you feel it was exaggerated at the time?
Well, it was exaggerated at the time, and it doesn't bother me right now. You know, I don't remember negative things bother with that. That doesn't help anybody. It certainly doesn't help yourself. I'm forgiving. I don't have any enemies that I know of, and everybody's been fair with me. The only thing is McPherson was out of line, I think, the way he handled that investigation where they found out that we weren't guilty of anything.
Do you acknowledge any responsibility for what was happening at that time, the accusations?
Oh, yeah, I'm responsible for every bit of it, and we answered all the questions there were to it.
A lot of Michigan State fans remember your effort to remain head football coach and become athletic director. At the time, that seemed really important to you. Why was that?
Well, I wanted to be an athletic director and football coach so I could help everybody in athletics and making sure they're well represented. But DiBiagio somehow had the board come up with a policy that no one person could have 2 jobs. I was football coach and AD. I didn't take a nickel as AD, and the same salary as I got as a football coach. We were in the black the 2 years I was athletic director. I've always been fairly good with numbers. I've always had a philosophy that I don't need to know about trig, or what I'm worried about is add, subtract, multiply, and divide. That's what I want to know about. And we made money for those 2 years, and we helped them non-revenue sports. That's why some of them are still my good friends. We did a lot for non-revenue sports, earning money so they would have the chance to have used their full scholarships.
In 95, you and former MSU Sports Information Director Ken Hoffman launched the Motor City Bowl, which has morphed into the Little Caesars Pizza Bowl in 09 and continues today. How long had you had that idea?
You kept flashing. It flashed in your head over and over and over. And then finally, we decided, let's go ahead and take a shot at it. There was only 17 bowls in those days. Like there's twice that many right now. 17 years, it'll be this year, 17 years of doing it. It was very unique business. You can't, normally when you go into business, you have to have some capital. You start a bowl game, we didn't have a nickel. And just started it, rented the stadium, made it work. We were doing very, very well all these years. It was a lot of fun. And when there was a recession and the big three couldn't support anymore, I went to Mike Ilitch and he took us over as the Little Caesar Bowl. We have similar backgrounds. Mike went to Cooley High School in Detroit. Mike got out of high school and went into minor league baseball and then came back home and was selling aluminum siding and decided to open up a pizza place. And now he has 3,000 of them. One of the great guys, great friend.
Former MSU head football coach and athletic director George Perlis is our guest today on Current State's Voices of Experience. You became a significant supporter of Special Olympics at some point. What drew you to that cause as opposed to any number of other causes?
Well, when I came back as head football coach, there was an old tradition that students would tear down the goalposts at the Tunnel End, win, lose, or tie the last game. And so our people told me that Gene Kenny, vice president for facilities, said, we'll fix them, we'll put them in concrete, the posts, like the old goalposts used to be, not the tuning fork. And I said, we can't do that, we're going backwards. Put the tuning fork goalposts up. I'll plead to the students in the school newspaper not to tear them down. If they don't, I'll give the money the goalpost costs to charity. Well, they didn't tear them down our first game, because the year before that, before I came here, Iowa had scored a touchdown. They couldn't kick the extra point. There was no goalpost, so they had to go down the other end of the field. It made national headlines. It was an embarrassment. And I looked for a charity. I had an assistant coach on my staff by the name of Norm Parker, who had a son, Jeffrey, that was in the Special Olympics. So that's why I picked Special Olympics. And we just finished our 26th year of Special Olympics. We had 224 golfers this last August, and we cleared $70,000 this year for the Special Olympics.
You became affiliated with Frank Kelly, the eternal general, in your Special Olympics golf outing, and with Peter Secchia, a very prominent guy in West Michigan, former U.S. ambassador to Italy. Why those two guys?
When we first started this, it was the George Perlis golf outing. And when I was done coaching, I said, uh-oh, I've seen these golf programs come and go, so we want to make sure this stays strong. So I asked Frank, who was a good friend, and Peter, who was a good friend, one a Republican, one a Democrat, to lay down their armor. So they agreed to do it. And it was just, I knew both of them. Frank went with me on every trip as a guest in all my away games, him and Joe Farrell. And I took Peter Secchia on some trips. So I was friends with both of them, even though they weren't friends among themselves. But they did lay the armor down. They helped me, and we've kept the Special Olympics golf game going all this time.
You've been a Democratic member of the MSU Board of Trustees since 08. What do you find most rewarding about that, George?
Well, what's rewarding is looking for every way you can and trying to help to keep tuition down. That's a big thing with me. These kids and their parents and these kids taking loans, it's tough. When we hit that area, that's where I'm most active and most interested in, is keeping the tuition down. We have a good president, Luana. She knows her business, and I have a lot of confidence in her. We have a good board. We work together. We don't have any bickering, and so I think it all helps the school.
Are college costs going to become a bigger challenge before they get better? I mean, is the problem going to get worse before it starts getting better, do you think?
Absolutely, it will be. And these loans these kids are taking out, first of all, they can't find jobs, and they have this debt that they, when they do get a job, that they have to pay back, or their parents can't afford it. It's so expensive right now. It's going to get worse before it gets better.
Your mobility's become compromised in recent years. You use a walker and a wheelchair sometimes. How challenging has that been?
Well, I don't like it. I wish I could take that walker and wheelchair and throw them in the lake, but it doesn't bother me so much. What the problem is I have people helping me do things, and it's embarrassing. I have to have Sally. That's the one that I worry about the most. Sally's doing things that she takes the garbage out. She does all the things I should be doing, and when I sit there and watch her do it, it hurts. She has to do all the work, and she has to deal with everything because I'm not as mobile as I'd like to be.
You've enjoyed a long, active, interesting career. What are you proudest of?
Well, I guess proudest of having the opportunity to being the head football coach at Michigan State. I'm proud of the Rose Bowl. I'm proud of the 4 Super Bowls we had with Pittsburgh. Those are the highlights, the Super Bowls, Rose Bowl. Those are things that make you feel good.
George Perlis, for decades associated closely with Michigan State University, both the administration as a trustee and as head football coach and icon of the athletic department for many years. This has been a part of our ongoing series, Voices of Experience, here on Current State.